line three, laughter technology versus health.
Promotion.
I would imagine, but I do.
Please proceed whenever you're ready. And if you wouldn't mind, because we're at a different venue, if you want to start with the first minute, just giving a bit of a background about the story of this case, that would be nice, having you do it rather than our having to do it.
Sure, Your Honor.
Thank
no problem.
You.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court. Thank you to the City of Dallas and the State of Texas for hosting us today. I'm here today on behalf of Blackbird Technologies, a company based out of Boston, Massachusetts. This case involves a patent dealing with fitness equipment. Pieces of equipment where users can, have a free range of motion in exercising. Why we're here today is because
the record will reflect that counsel was moving his arm.
A short workout for the court. We're here today because the Central District of California, after this case was dismissed by Blackbird, entertained HIMs, who was the defendant in that case, a motion for fees that this case was exceptional in the amount of $363,000 in attorney's fees, awarded the full amount to HIM. Finding that this case was exceptional, and Blackbird appealed.
And the fee, shockingly, that amount seems relatively small to what we see in most patent cases, but that's simply because the case wasn't really litigated.
That's correct, Your Honor. Yes, and that's a good point, because I don't want that to be lost throughout this argument, that $363,000 may seem like a small amount in patent litigation, but for what was actually done in this case, which wasn't a lot, and also why that expense was incurred is very important too.
Blackbird admits to having filed over 100 lawsuits since its inception in 2014. What percentage of those lawsuits were settled before a decision on the merits?
Your Honor, I'm not sure. We may have had those percentages in our brief. I think it's a majority of them have been settled prior to a decision on the merits. That does not mean that decisions on the merits have not happened. There was plenty of IPRs.
That's my next question.
Right.
How many were decided on the merits?
Offhand, I don't know, Your Honor.
Really? Was it more than 10?
Again, Your Honor, I don't know the specific amount.
Was it more than 2?
When you say decided on the merits, do you mean a full final decision on the merits? I don't believe any have reached a full final decision on the merits.
Yeah, that's my understanding. Appellees describe Blackbird as, quote, an all-in-one affair in which employee attorneys possess the documents subject to discovery in this case. Is that true?
So attorneys are the main employees of the firm Blackbird, and we represent. So yes, we have the documents in house, and we do consist of all attorneys.
Well, then how on earth did Blackbird fail to timely produce and indeed withhold responsive documents when appellees learned of them during depositions? I mean, what did they have to do? Go talk to your client? Wait. You are your client.
Understood, Your Honor. And frankly, I'll be honest that I was not at the the firm at this point, at the company at this point, so I don't know exactly why that didn't happen. All I know that it was inadvertent.
Didn't you ask him when you were preparing for this argument?
All I know is that it was inadvertent.
Well, you say you know it was inadvertent. How do you know it was inadvertent?
Because that's what I was told, Your Honor. That it was inadvertent that they weren't produced at the time, and they were immediately produced. I think that's why that suggests to me it was inadvertent, is that there was nothing to hide at that point. It was, oh, okay, we found these documents, let's produce them. There was no prejudice. What's that?
We found them. We are them. I mean, it's not like your client produces boxes of information and you go through them and somebody says something and you go, geez, maybe it's in there, and go back and find it. You're attorneys. You know what, and you're the client. You know what you have. If so, facto. If you don't, there's a problem with the practice of law.
Understood, Your Honor. And I understand that point. It's hard for me to address that without having been on the ground at the time that whatever happened. Then all I can say is that I think the act of preparing those documents and producing them well before the end of discovery, and then having HIM really raise no issue with that, suggests that, okay, maybe if there was an oversight, maybe it was an oversight that should not have happened. Either way, there was no prejudice ever raised about what happened. HIM never asked to depose Blackbird again because of these documents, or raised any other issue with the court about it.
Well, let me just add, on page 3 on the gray brief, you say, this is the real reason the parties continue to litigate this case unnecessarily, and the reason why Blackbird was forced to either dismiss the case on its own or proceed to to trial on a claim that had no justifiable value. How can you say that this is a situation you did not create when you're the plaintiff and you admit the claim that you were pursuing had no justifiable value?
Well, first, Your Honor, until we received the financials from HIM, we didn't know the value of the case. And when they did make those initial productions of those numbers, what we saw, again, the briefing says this, they were suspect, because when you compare them with some of the distributors' margins, things didn't add up. So we wanted to litigate the case to figure that out. What happened is that the case progressed for, I think, another year, until January 2018, where more disclosures were made regarding financials. At that point, Blackbird realized that the case had little value. At that point, also, and even before then, Blackbird made attempts to reasonably settle the case.
You kept lowering the demand, is what you did.
Right, which is perfectly reasonable, I think, under this court's precedent, that you can reduce those demands as the case is starting to get to a point that's becoming more expensive. And this case, in particular, was on a speeding freight train to trial. And so we made
You're
very
familiar
many,
with Rule 1 of the Federal Rules of Civil Procedure.
Excuse me?
I said you're familiar, you have to be,
yes,
with Rule 1 of the Federal Rules of Civil Procedure, which requires just and speedy determination.
Yes, Your Honor. And I'm not, the reason I'm not saying that because this was on a fast-paced trial, that's a reason to reverse this case, what I'm saying is that Blackbird saw what was coming. And
so, sure it did.
Right, and the problem was we were trying to reasonably resolve it, but it was HIM who wouldn't let that happen.
Wait a minute. What you're saying in general is if a lawyer sues somebody, if a party sues somebody with a meritless case, and the other side doesn't say, this is meritless, I'm not going to litigate it, I'll just let you move ahead. Or if they don't say, geez, this is meritless, and you're suing me for $10 million, and I'll offer you $5 million, so you'll walk away, that they're somehow in the wrong for not folding or for not accepting a de minimis offer. Once you sue them, don't they have a right to get a judgment in their favor? Or have you dismissed the lawsuit?
They do, Your Honor. And in the first instance, I don't think, First, there was never some sort of acknowledgement or capitulation that this was a meritless case at any point. And second, at the same on the flip side of that,
we can go through the merits of your patent if you like.
Well, Your Honor, I can get to the merits of our infringement position, but at no time did we ever believe that our case was meritless and then decide to get out of it. I think that's the false narrative that was being pushed here, was that we believed our case was meritless, so let's try to get out of this thing as fast as possible before a summary judgment issue could order or trial was coming. That was never the case. That never was the case. And we still believe in
merits. How do you demonstrate the value when you never litigated one of these things to a complete conclusion with over 100 lawsuits filed?
Well, we assess the value by doing, by understanding damages calculations, a reasonable royalty. So if they give us their numbers, also HIM had...
Isn't there a reasonable implication on the part of a reviewing court that, in fact, what you're assessing is the nuisance value, that is the cost of litigation for the defendant, and their willingness to cut that cost by offering you something?
In this case, Your Honor, that's not at all what happened. Those numbers were directly based...
I didn't ask you that. I asked you about your business model.
No, Your Honor, I disagree completely. In every instance in our business model, we attempt to assess the actual sales numbers from defendants and then try to apply a reasonable royalty based on either other rates we have settled
with. I don't understand. In this case, you started with a number and then you kept on coming back and it kept on decreasing. So what was it based on other than you're just wanting to get rid of this case and try to extract whatever amount you could from the defendant?
Your Honor, if you can keep in context the fact that we still believed our case to be have merit, that those decreasing amounts were to resolve the case while still believing in our case, but not wanting to expend the money to go to trial for something that was going to result in a royalty that was going to be far less than the cost of going to trial.
Okay, it seems to me like a portion, at least, of the amount was sort of almost your fault, because you didn't, my understanding, so you can correct me if I'm wrong on the facts, we have a lot of cases this week, is that the day before or the day of some submissions being due on their part, which obviously they incurred fees in preparing, it was only then that you told them, oh, we're done, we don't want anything, we're just going to move to dismiss with prejudice and a covenant not to sue. If you had done that perhaps 2, 3, 4 weeks before, you could have saved some of the money. You're now liable. Am I right about how this all went down?
That's a slice of it, but there's actually context to all of that and to why it led to that final point, because we were being put in that position.
Well, it led to that final point because they wouldn't agree to walk away without attorney's fees, and you knew you were going to lose and get slapped with the big attorney's fees reward, so you entered the covenant not to sue. Isn't that the district court's view of what the situation was here?
That's not why we dismissed the case.
I'm not asking you what you think you did. It's the district court's view that you engaged in that kind of abusive settlement process. Isn't that what's in his decision as one of the grounds for an exceptional circumstance?
Yes, Your Honor, that does appear to be one of the grounds. Of course, there's not a lot of analysis behind that or any sort of acknowledgement as to what led to that point, but yes, you're right.
What's our standard of review here?
What's that?
What's our standard of review?
It's an abuse of discretion, Your Honor.
Right, so he has to make factual findings.
Yes.
He did. He made two different factual findings about what it was entitled to. We don't have to have him show his work in exact detail with this analysis, as long as we have factual findings that are, in some way, not an abuse of discretion.
That's correct, Your Honor, but in this instance, those factual findings are not consistent with the actual record. And the district court judge points to those settlement numbers as being just nuisance value settlements, and that's wrong. The record does not support that. That's one of the reasons.
Isn't that an inference when you start with 80, then you go to 50, then you go to 15, and then when you can't get anything at all and are about to get slapped with the summary judgment motion, go to 0 and a covenant not to sue? Can't he make that inference?
I don't believe so, and that starting number is actually coming from real data and a real royalty license.
Well, maybe the 80 was, But the 50 to the 15 to the zero sure seems like abusive settlement practices to me. I don't see why he can't draw that inference.
I think that inference could be drawn only where there were some indication that our merits were weak. And up until that point, there was absolutely no indication that
he also made the finding that your merits were weak, and that you should have known that.
Well, we think that that finding is definitely an error because there is no analysis in that section. And there is no finding in that section other than our claim constructions were flawed. And that's not even the test. The test is not whether it's flawed, it's whether it's objectively baseless. And in that sense, Your Honor, the court...
He said it was frivolous. I mean, he viewed it as not just flawed, he viewed it as frivolous.
But that's the only reasoning the court provided in this instance.
We thought so this, I mean, that's a factual finding. If we look at the record and we don't find any abuse of discretion in that finding, then we can affirm, can't we? Even if we disagree with this finding, that doesn't make it an abuse of discretion.
Let me put it this way. You've joined the firm later, but it's safe to presume that you're familiar with your firm's practices in general.
Yes, Your Honor.
Do you have a standard number that you seek when you file a lawsuit?
Absolutely not, Your Honor.
So it varies from the size of the defendant?
It varies specifically on the accused product and the sales of the accused product and a reasonable royalty applied to those sales.
But you don't know in advance.
No.
So what do you start with?
We don't start with anything, Your Honor. We start with attempting to get, early on in the case, trying to get
sales numbers. You file a complaint, do you not?
Yes, we do.
Does the complaint seek a number, or does it just say damages?
No, most complaints, Your Honor, just seek damages at the beginning because we just don't know.
Really? Not in jurisdiction?
We don't know the specific amounts and numbers, Your Honor, but we do claim damages under, you know, Section 284, I believe.
Okay, we've exceeded our time. We'll restore a little longer.
Thanks.
Let's hear from you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you.
May it please the court, Your Honors. Bill Holbrow here on behalf of Apelli.
Mr. Holbrow, I have a question for you.
Yes, sir.
In your request for attorney's fees and expenses, you included 40 hours as an estimate of future services to be performed in replying to Blackbird's opposition to your request. Were those 40 hours actually performed?
Actually, we exceeded the 40 hours.
Thank you, Your Honor.
And as the court's alluded to, and was previously discussed, my client's not a big company. It's 30 employees, it's got a lot of overhead, it's got a lot of marketing expenses. So to get sued on a patent infringement case is debilitating and takes a lot of money and resources. And I understand everyone's got a right to conduct the business the way they want. But the way that Black...
That's not true.
Well, within reason, within the law, Your Honor, yes. But the way Blackbird has set up its business is to, as patent attorneys that are both the company and the law firm. So they cut back on overhead and makes them, does two things. It makes it very easy for them to sue companies, and it also makes it very challenging makes it challenging to for defendants in our position from adequately being on the same playing field because one side's spending a lot of fees.
No, we understand that, but the challenge for the judiciary in these kinds of attorney's fees cases, and it's been expressed by some of the district court judges, is happily best for everyone involved. A lot of these cases go away early, as this one did. But then in reviewing the attorney's fees request, you've got to make some assessment of the merits of the case. One judge has complained in writing, one retired, now retired judge. I got rid of this case on a 12B6. I don't want to relitigate the case in order to be able to provide attorney's fees. So one of the arguments in this case is it was too thin. I mean, at this juncture, the case had not been litigated. And what the judge said, which we have to have a record to review, even under a loose abuse of discretion standard, it was thin, right? So where's the line between too thin and just thin when we're dealing with a case that was dismissed before it was actually litigated in full?
Well, it was litigated, and all discovery was completed. Motion for summary judgment was fully briefed. In fact, in the judge's order granting fees, he comments that Blackbird dismissed the case on the verge of the decision coming out of the summary judgment motion. So there was a lot to this case. In fact, as the court discussed earlier, we were weeks away from trial. We were preparing exhibit lists, we were preparing witness lists, we were preparing all the other documents that are necessary to prepare for trial. And on the Monday that a lot of these documents were due, we didn't even get a call from Blackbird. We just saw that on the ECF that they had filed these documents dismissing the case, coming not to sue. And then subsequently later that afternoon, got an email saying the case is over. And so we had spent a lot of time developing, preparing for trial. The judge was aware, because the judge had had the motion for summary judgment fully briefed for over a month before he made the decision granting the fee motion. And the judge does give a very detailed explanation on why under Octane fees were awarded in this case. In the order on Appendix 18 and 19, it references flawed claim construction, flawed infringement contentions. Blackbird made settlement payments far less than the cost of the anticipated defense. Blackbird delayed in producing documents. Blackbird withheld documents after the deposition. Blackbird completely failed to produce other documents. Blackbird filed a notice of dismissal, covenant not to sue, and motion to dismiss without first notifying defendant's counsel.
Is the court in error about that? Your opposing counsel says that they voluntarily produced everything.
No, Your Honor. I was there. I was taking the deposition of the 30B6 witness, and several documents were identified that had not been produced. I offered to stay to continue the deposition until they could be produced, and they said they'd produce them down the road, so I was unable to depose the witness on those documents. And then the next day, I took the deposition of the inventor in the case, who, interestingly enough, as we lay out in our papers, had a entirely disagreed with Blackbird's claim infringement position, and he testified that he had exchanged some documents with the Blackbird attorneys, and those weren't produced. We asked for those to be produced, and they weren't produced. And then were they ever produced? No, they were never produced. They subsequently claimed they're privileged without providing privilege log or any explanation as to the basis.
Privilege because of their communications with themselves?
Well, these are the ones that claim privilege were the communications between them and the third-party inventor.
Were they the inventor's attorneys?
So they have their local counsel, Stamos Stamoulopoulos, is on brief here and has been part of the case. He was representing the inventor. So it was unclear.
Did the inventor's attorney assert that privilege?
No, they didn't assert that until after after the deposition there. So I think, unless the court has any other questions, we'll submit on the papers. And thank you for your time.
Did you ask for attorney's fees for this appeal?
Not yet, Your Honor. That's
still out there, though.
It is still out there. We the discussions with the client who's not familiar with patent litigation cases, and the fact that when we got the attorney's fee award, thought that they would be able to replenish some of their funds, and now almost a year and a half, 2 years later, still hasn't happened, and they've been incurring additional fees is problematic. So, thank you very much.
Will we store 2 minutes of rebuttal?
Good, because I have at least 2 minutes of questions, and let's start with this. You represented to this court in your argument in chief that after the deposition, all documents were provided. Is that true or not true?
Your Honor, I thought you meant the group of documents that specifically was referring to at that deposition, not the group of documents that were...
Your opposing counsel just told me that there were documents identified in that deposition which he offered to suspend the deposition to allow them to be presented, and that was declined. and that there were other documents identified in that deposition, and those were not produced. Is that true or not true?
That is true, Your Honor. And
it's directly contrary to what you told me.
Well, maybe it was my misunderstanding of your question, Your Honor, because there are two sets of documents here. The first set of documents are those documents that were being prepared for production at the time of that deposition and were produced after. And I'm not entirely clear, but I think those have to do with communications between the inventor and Blackwork prior to acquisition, which we do not have a claim of privilege to. There are a group of documents...
Wait, stop. You say you do not have a claim of privilege?
Well, for communications between Blackbird and the inventor up until the acquisition of the patent, we do not typically claim privilege for those. At the point of acquisition after communications, we do claim a privilege of those.
And then at that point you became the inventor's attorneys?
I think in terms of... there would be a common interest work product claim at that point since we were pursuing litigation. So I think that's kind of where we draw that line, because up until acquisition, I don't think there's any sort of relationship there. But no, I'm not saying that we are representing the inventor at that point, but there's a common interest at that point.
Did you assert that privilege against the inventor?
I don't believe we did, Your Honor.
So the inventor could waive that privilege, could he not?
I don't know if the inventor could waive the privilege without our say-so either. I don't believe he did waive the privilege in any way during those depositions. I don't think that's what was being claimed by counsel, is that he waived that privilege. So I don't know, Your Honor. And I just want to clarify a few things. One, I know we're talking about the inference of whether our case was, the court could figure out that our case was frivolous. The actions that we took would never indicate that. It was Blackbird who wanted to ask to stay the case so that summary judgment could be decided. That was what we requested, so that we could get a decision on the merits to evaluate the strength of our case.
I don't understand what your sentence was, just convoluted, or maybe it's me. Can you repeat what you're saying? You said it was us, it was them?
No, it was Blackbird who requested a stay so that the court could decide the summary judgment motion so that the parties would not have to incur additional fees.
So you weren't prepared for trial?
The court denied it.
The court denied that, that's correct.
The court's allowed to do that.
That's correct. My point is that we were not running from the merits of the case. We wanted them decided in some way, just so that we would not have to expend unnecessary expense to go to trial. Stay the case, have the court decide on the merits, and we reserve their right to be able to still seek attorney's fees. So we weren't running from this case. We weren't running from the merits. And just to address Chief Judge Prost's question earlier about the fees at the time of the dismissal, when we dismissed the case, it was HIM who refused to stipulate to that dismissal, and during that window, up until they eventually did, was when a lot of that pretrial work was being done.
Well, they didn't stipulate to dismissal because they didn't want to agree to walk away without preserving the right to get attorney's fees.
Right, and I think there was another discussion about, who was the prevailing party or something like that, Your Honor. But they could have stipulated that, and I think we were still agreeing to allow them to move for attorney's fees.
Wouldn't it have been reasonable? Wait a minute. Sorry. You say you were agreeing to allow them to move for attorney's fees?
Yes, we were, Your Honor.
Where in the record, before your covenant not to sue and your motion to dismiss, did you say you would walk away and allow them to preserve their right to seek attorney's fees?
My understanding.
At what point? Was it after the $80,000 offer, or the $50,000 offer, or the 15, or the zero?
I think it was after the zero. After the during the walkaway offer, I think also involved allowing them to move for attorney's fees.
Show us where the record that is, please.
One moment, Your Honor. Yes, Your Honor, that would be APPX 2539. It's also on blue brief, pages 7 and 8. And it reflects Blackbird's final offer by phone and email on May 24, 2018, where it's a walk-away settlement, and it also says we are willing to preserve HIM's ability to file a motion seeking exceptional case fees under Section 285 after the case is dismissed.
What date is that in relation to the dismissal?
I believe that was a day or so before. It was 4 days.
So all the litigation costs had already been incurred by this anyway. This is a couple days before you issued the covenant of not to sue.
Well, a day before, you say. So 1 day.
It was 4 days, Your Honor. Sorry. May 28th was 4 days later, yes.
Well, what difference does it make that you did that 4 days before moving to dismiss? It's not like you saved them any attorney's fees at that point. I mean, if you would have done this well before and offered to walk away and they hadn't expended almost $400,000 in attorney's fees, and it might be a different scenario.
Yeah, or to alter that, where prior to this did you offer to 11 get attorney's fees? Is there an earlier date?
I don't believe there's an early date on that one, Your Honor, but I'm not sure.
All the other walkaway offers were for them to forego the right to seek fees, weren't they?
Yes, sir.
Right. Thank you. We thank both sides.